Let's talk to interesting people. Let's talk about the process of seeing things differently. Let's talk about the craft of molding truth and fiction together to arrive at something new and exciting. And let's have fun while doing it. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast.
Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, the place where we dive deep into the minds of incredibly talented and creative individuals and try to unravel the mysteries behind their inspirations. I'm your host, Patrick Boggs, and joining me on this fantastic journey is my co-host of True Fiction, the uncanny Norbert Yates. How's it going tonight, Norbert?
And stay dry.
That's hard to do these days, but we just got to keep trying. Tonight, our guest has almost two decades of experience writing and creative directing culturally relevant and award-winning work at places like GSD&M, Mullen Lowe, Hill Holliday, David and Goliath, The Martin Agency, and Arnold Worldwide. He's worked on the long-running campaigns featuring the Geico's Gecko and Progressive's Flo. He won a one-show gold pencil for his work on Kia's 2012 Super Bowl commercial and a titanium cans lion for his work on Benjamin Moore. True Fiction welcomes co-founder and creative director of Virginia-based agency Familiar Creatures, Justin Bajan. How's it going tonight, Justin?
It's going great. Nice to meet you guys.
Good to meet you, and I'm glad that we could talk with you tonight. We've been talking a little bit earlier, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you and talking. So you worked with some pretty major agencies. What made you say, heck, I'm going to go do this myself?
Yeah, learn a lot along the way, and you start out with a lot of gusto going to advertising school. You're going to change the world. Also, I'm an elder millennial, so I have enough optimism to believe that. But then throughout the time, you forget the dreams and you're just working, you're being pragmatic. But I always took notes mentally about things that I liked at the places I worked and things I didn't like. And I thought it was all to going, just becoming more of a senior creative director to group creative director to executive creative director, up and down the food chain. But my partner, who I'd worked with at the Martin Agency, had an opportunity to work on Devil's Backbone. It's a brewery in Virginia. It was acquired by Anheuser-Busch. And he said, what if we started an agency and we worked on beer accounts? And that sounded pretty good. And we already worked really well together. We could move mountains in seconds. And took a flyer on it, but it wasn't much of a flyer because I had already lived in Richmond, Virginia, and I loved the town. So it was a great opportunity to come back here and start something fresh and see where it goes. And in a couple of months, it'll be 6 years since we started. So pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Congratulations. What sets Familiar Creatures apart from all the other ad agencies? There's so many, and there's so many good ones.
We just have a big heart for working on challenger brands. So that's our focus. We love to help them run circles around, we call them brand behemoths, so the market leaders. And when you're a challenger brand, you have to think in non-traditional ways. You can't act like the market leader, otherwise you'll just get swallowed up by their media spends and the dominance they have with the money and their marketing budgets. So we just do whatever it takes to help these brands win. And so you see that in our work. It's hard to ignore. I believe you either love it or you hate it. And I think very few hate it. And the ones that hate it, maybe they work at some of these brand behemoths. So I guess that's my answer.
One of the things I think about with different creative people and partnerships of any kind, there's always a sense of I'm stronger in this part and somebody else may have this other strength that I don't have. And ideally you complement yourself. Did you guys, as a partnership, do you think like that? Or are you just generalist in the sense of the way you work as a partnership? How does that work?
Some of our sort of inner motivations and how we are wired from working together for a handful of years, several years at the Martin Agency. And then in those early days of trying to get your business license and learning about insurance, you learn, okay, so I have these innate personality traits. Let's convert those into skills. When you work in big agencies, you're very specialized. You work in a niche and you're known for doing one or two things. When you start your own agency, you start divvying up the hats. You go, who's going to wear these hats? And my partner, Dustin, very gifted at operations and finances, things like accounting. These are incredible skills to have as an art director. I don't even know how he is also good at those things. So let's just say he's really talented in the day-to-day. I'm extroverted, I'm blue sky, optimistic, I'm a networker, a relator. And so I really love working on new business and recruiting. And so in addition to him being an art director and me being a writer, yeah, it is a puzzle piece situation where we had these other skills that we didn't really have to ever use at the big agencies. And now we get to use them as our own agency.
So when you get a project in, do you both work on it? Does one work on it first and then you bring another in? I think of Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. They would always talk about sometimes one would have an idea, another one would have an idea, or if writers had an idea, they would say, if one of them liked it, then it might be good. If both of them liked it, it was gold. Do you have some sort of formula with this, or does it just, I'm going to work on this one today because I got some time, or how does the day-to-day work on working on a creative product?
There's, okay, two answers. One is we have gotten to a place, for better or for worse, I think most people would say for better, that we don't work on the creative anymore. And so that kind of dynamic, we don't experience too much anymore. But in the past, when we're at the Martin Agency and then like maybe the first 2 years of Familiar Creatures, we did a different way each time. Sometimes you'd have time in your life to actually work on something in advance, and then you come together and you bring your half thought out ideas. And then sometimes you just go outside and you sit on the picnic table and you just stare at each other and you start talking to each other from scratch. And we developed enough of a shorthand that we could do it that way. We know each other's tendencies and know where each person was going. So yeah, it goes either way. Then there's no right way to do it. Although I think some people who haven't worked together a long time, I would not recommend the second way of just like staring at each other and just starting extemporaneously talking. Sometimes the best way is thinking on your own and then coming together.
You don't work on creative day to day. What do you do to, I assume there's a creative part of you and you're an extrovert, which that there's a fulfillment in meeting people, bringing them in and building relationships. There's a satisfaction to that. And I suppose there's also a creative component to that. How do I crack this nut of this person? Because I'm sure there's all kinds of personalities you deal with, and some of them are difficult, some of them are easy. But most creatives that we talk to have to have something in their lives that gives them that release.
You're absolutely right. You cannot stifle, and I've actually been using the word curse. Creativity is a curse because if you're creative, you can't not create. And I still get to use the gifts I was blessed with in different ways. I still creative direct. So that gives me that some of that joy and satisfaction. But man, I write tweets all the time and LinkedIn posts that are just silly. And my Apple Notes app is full of just jokes that no one will ever see. So that gives me some of that satisfaction. But I really love watching our creatures come up with new ideas and bring them to us and get excited and develop them. I don't remember that many times in my past that my creative directors were happy for me. Advertising is territorial. It's a scarcity mindset. You know, there's a lot of hoarding that goes on with opportunities, and everyone's trying to keep their jobs. And there's the big fear that if you give something away, then you'll lose your juice and then lose your edge and then you'll lose your job. And I don't have to worry about that at Familiar Creatures. I own the place. So I'm happy to have an abundance mindset instead of scarcity. And it's so fun to watch the creatures just go ham on thinking and seeing how things develop and being a part of it, guiding them like a little shepherd with a shepherd's crook, whatever that tool is called. And that brings a certain level of fulfillment for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Now, how do you divvy up the work? How do you decide who's getting what? Is it who's got the excitement for it and says, send me in, coach? Or is it, do you know the people? It's 6 years, so you maybe know some people that you know what their powers are.
Yeah. So, you know, in those 6 years, it started out very garage phase, Wozniak and Jobs, just what could a company be? Let's start doing some things. And at this point, processes have come into the place, and we follow those processes. So we always do resourcing. We think about who's busy, who's covered up, and who's open, and work is assigned that way. We're not huge. We're not a 500 person agency. Most of the creatives are going to touch every project, depending on the size of it. There will be times when it's just one person or two person band situation, but yeah. And even in the way that we team up people, sometimes we think of sensibilities and go, okay, this is more of a Silly Billy kind of idea. Yeah, a Silly Billy kind of project. Let's have the Silly Billies together. And this one's maybe a little bit more serious. Let's break up people that normally work on it and refit them a different way. It ranges, but we're not so huge that it's, oh, we have the funny guy and then we have the serious lady and then we have the whatever. It's everyone has to be good at pretty much everything.
Do you handle the writers and then your partner handles the art? Is that how you guys do it?
Yeah, that's the simplest way. I give the writers the performance reviews and then I expect them to also be in touch with me, collaborating, sending me their stuff along the way. And then Dustin shepherds the art directors. But again, me being more extroverted, I'm happy to leave my little corner in the open layout and go talk to everyone and see how they're doing. And then invariably, that leads to us jamming on an idea together. And it doesn't matter if they're a writer or an art director. But that's like the org chart of it all is I handle the writers, he handles the art directors.
I divvy up creativity into like execution and ideas. Like some people, the rare person has both. And I was thinking about it like in terms of writing. I assume that there's people that are better conceptually with coming up with an idea. And there may be other people that are better at turns of phrases or that kind of thing. And do you even think about that in terms of when you're evaluating your concept, do you segment the different kind of ways that a project could be good? Or do you just go, well, that's good? Or how do you look at something from a writer's perspective?
For sure. I think one thing I'll say is I saw an Instagram story, I don't even know, maybe a year ago. It was from one of my former creative directors at the Martin Agency, and he reposted it. He probably wishes he wrote this, but it said, an idea without execution is a hallucination. And that just hit me so hard. I wish I had seen that 20 years ago. There wasn't Instagram then. But anybody can have an idea. Like your mom, your sister, the postman, your friend at church. And they all have ideas, especially when they find out you're in advertising, they tell you their ideas. But when you listen to their ideas, you go, okay, that's not really possible. That's never going to happen. Or there's a nugget there, but now you have to like chase down that nugget and make it into something. And I'm a little bit more of a dreamer than the average bear, but in advertising, I'm pretty pragmatic. And there's many times that I've thought of something that was too hard to pull off. Really what keeps you in check is the budget and the client sensibilities and then the strategy that you've established. It comes with the tone of it and people you're trying to reach. And I still have ideas that are kooky and it could never, ever happen. And that's what I said. That's what the Apple Note app is for. Just write them down, get them out of your head. They come to you. You don't know when an idea is going to come to you. It could come to you at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It could come to you at 3 o'clock in the morning during your little anxiety session in bed. And I've just learned you got to just write it down. You just got to get at it. Because I mentioned it's a curse. It haunts you. Ideas haunt you. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but there are people that are more, and I remember you guys asking this question on the interview with the guy from Big Spaceship. There are people that are more idea driven. There are people that are more execution driven, but you have to have a good measure of both to be successful.
So do you ever go back? Do you ever like, you're asked to do something by a client and you go, oh my gosh, I wrote something in my Apple notebook 6 months ago. Have you ever done that before?
I really wish it was, that would be so efficient. There's ideas or work has different seasons. And there's times for when you should have ideas for things. And there's times when you don't need them. And I come up with ideas that are out of season. And I hope that the season will come for those ideas. Duke's Mayonnaise. There's an idea in a folder on our server called, the folder's called year two, which we're way past year two, but year two is advertising slang for they can't do that right now. They can do that in a few years after they've established the brand some more. And so there's a funny script in there that I don't think we'll ever do, but it's one I tell people about, just a homespun storyteller. Oh, imagine this. Gather around. I have this idea that we'll never see the light of day, but it's pretty funny. And there's an idea that just sits in there, and it's satisfying enough just to have written it down and have it in a folder in a server. Like, it will never see the light of day. And maybe, to your point, they will come with a brief that will justify that idea, but I won't force it in on anything, no.
I remember in college, the one course that I thought was as valuable as anything else was the idea of reducing the inhibition for people to share ideas. Because, and the reason that this is relevant to what you were talking about is maybe not your idea that you wrote down is great, but that idea may make you think of something else that's sure. adjacent and go, oh, that's perfect for this. Or somebody said something 3 weeks ago or something that at the time didn't really register, but now it clicks.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's happened to you, but that's one of the things I thought was really, it's always really, even bad ideas, maybe the worst ideas will turn you on to something good.
To your point, it's seeking stimulus. And so I don't know how Rapunzel could ever have written a good poem because she was in that tower the whole time. But the rest of us who are actually free, there's so many moments of stimulus in our day. And it could be a conversation. It could be a show. It could be a movie. It could be a museum. And ideas, good or bad, are also stimulus to get you to something better. And so you got to keep your ears open, your eyes open. I remember when I was in advertising school, I had a little tiny notebook. This is pre-smartphones. It's 2005. And I have a little dollar notebook, like I was some kind of like hack journalist for the AP. But I would just be like, oh, that's interesting to write down. That was the first Apple Notes. And who knows how many of those things sparked something useful. But you are a reporter just recording things around you. And sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's subconscious.
Kurt Vonnegut once told these kids to write a story, and then once they're done with it, to just destroy them. And I always thought that was interesting because that's something that really fascinates me, to basically get it out there, just to get it out there. It doesn't have to be for anybody. And I think that's really important for new people. I wonder, too, if your creatives, if they do exercises to basically empty out their brains of a type. Is that something that you guys talk about at all?
First of all, Kurt Vonnegut, I always say I was 17, 18 years old. And when you're a male, your brain isn't fully formed yet. But then whatever gets in there as the frontal lobe is closing up, stays in there. And Kurt Vonnegut and Radiohead and Aldous Huxley, they all came in at the same time.
Wow.
And Kurt Vonnegut, wind in my sails for my first, I would say, 10 years of just trying to be creative in my really nascent years where it's embarrassing what I'm doing before advertising, and then where it's somewhat decent early time in advertising. Kurt Vonnegut, an incredible inspiration. And he's an Indiana boy, right?
Absolutely. If you come to Indianapolis, you can visit his museum. It's awesome.
Oh, I got to add that.
It is awesome.
Got to put that in my Apple Notes. In terms of talking and training up the creatives at Familiar Creatures, there's a lot of, and we use Slack, there's a lot of direct messages from me of check out this campaign from 1998, check out this thing from 2004, learn what Jerry Graff did in the mid to late 2000s. But there's not a lot of applied like general creativity lessons, and maybe we would do well to incorporate that in some of our training, but no.
It's a long answer to say no.
We don't tell them to do that, but I think I hope they're doing that. And maybe you've inspired me to bring that back to the office tomorrow.
Along those lines, you was talking about how something sticks in your head. Like for me, I remember having a flu at, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. And mom brought home the Silver Warrior Frank Frazetta puzzle. Mm. And I put that together, and Frazetta's images decades later still resonate with me. And I remember looking at Bernie Wrightson's illustrated Frankenstein book, which if you've not seen that, it's one of the most amazing pen and ink renderings I've ever seen. Still to this day, but those things are baked into my brain. And there's a part of me that always gravitates to that. But sometimes like I can lay, as you get older and some certain things fall away and certain things come back in your mind or stimulate you. Like I've started looking at an old Renaissance artist named Caravaggio that did these really great uses of shadow and light. And I'm just wondering, have you noticed in your own creative journey, so to speak, in working with people, like he was talking about stuff being baked in your brain, do you still like move in that same direction? Mm-hmm. Have you parted from that and gone different directions, or are you like wobbling along that line?
Yeah, I think that there's underlying ethics that will structurally remain within my, I don't know, my philosophical outlook on how advertising should be done or what good writing is. Then on top of that, I personally go through seasons, like my favorite band of all time, which, wow, what an underground obscure band to think of. But I just think about in the 7 years of recorded history, they had basically seven eras of, and maybe even more, of creative expression. So you do something for a year, and you do something else for, so I'm still, the benefit of starting Familiar Creatures at age 35 or whatever is we weren't done being creative, and we still have the hunger and the drive and joy of making stuff, even if we don't make it as much as we used to. And yeah, I go through different phases. I've been in a phase for the last maybe year or two, which is like, how can we express an idea, a commercial? How can we create a commercial without dialogue in it? If we can do that, it will work in the social world that we live in, but also it will pull in so many people from ages 8 months to 88 years old. And I think about the silent movie era. That stuff worked really well. It was very entertaining for about 30 years. And even when you go into the early talkies and you move past the early talkies and you're in the Marx Brothers age, and then they inspired Sid Caesar and your show shows, that gives us Mel Brooks, that gives us Woody Allen. All those things are highly visual, and there's a lot of witty dialogue, but there's a lot of amazing set pieces where it's just hilarious to watch what they're doing with the sound off. And I've been in that era right now. Maybe next year I'll be like, no, I like talkie, try different things. But yeah, it does come from all from one place.
When you say that, there's one final thought on this is like, I like to illustrate stories or storyboard, however you want to call it. And then, but there's also something really satisfying about working on one piece that, you know, hopefully has more polish on it in it, and it, you meditate on it and you make it all it can be. And I was wondering in when you're running campaigns, do you think from the small thing that you can put everywhere and then you can expand? I got to imagine that you watch YouTube ads and they're 5 seconds before somebody can click out of. And I don't know how that's impacted the marketing world and our advertising world. Maybe you can expand a little bit about that.
Yeah. Let me try to think about how to tell this in a succinct manner. But when we work on campaigns, we think of things at the platform level. The platform would be like Nike Just Do It. Nike Just Do It has been around since 1987. It won't go away. And then there's work under it. There's work that you come out that sometimes you don't have to say Just Do It, but you feel Just Do It. So we think at that level where it's like a pithy set of words that you could live with for years. And if you could only have those pithy set of words with not much other context, you get it and you love it and you know what it's about. We're going through this exercise today, to your point, where we created a 30-second commercial for Crunch Fitness a few months ago, and we love that 30-second commercial. And we were asked, yeah, cool, can we make a 5-second or 6-second version so it can play on YouTube without you skipping it? And so you go, oh man, what is this if you only have 6 seconds to tell it? We wrote a really good campaign tagline, feel good, not bad. If you just say feel good, not bad, I think people will go, that's pretty crazy. I want to know more about that. So it has to work as a bumper sticker. And then it can expand out into a movie if it had to. So that's how we think. It can't just be a one-off that only serves one purpose, for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool. I know this is going to be an easy question for you. What are the key ingredients for a memorable and effective advertisement?
Yeah. I had a similar question on another podcast a couple months ago, and I'm trying to remember, my answer was really good. The key ingredients, all right, it's evocative. It makes you feel something. It's provocative. It makes you want to do something. And I would say that it creates an indelible impression that makes you want to tell people about it. If you think about Progressive's Dr. Rick campaign, where it's about millennials turning into their parents, all the day long, people quote that and tell other people about it. That is a huge success and a boon for Progressive because they've gained purchase into the people's brains now. They will think of Progressive. They might not switch to Progressive that day, but now they have created a positive, favorable impression, and it'll be hard to remove it. But that will stick with them for a long time. And yeah, I think it has to create an emotional response. It's got to make you feel, got to make you do something. It's got to make you talk about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, those commercials are fantastic, by the way. I had a friend that was giving me heck the other day because he came into my office and he said, "You, the tissues come in a box. You don't have to put a box over them." But then he goes, "That's where he got it from." So yeah, love those.
You have a good idea, or your team has a great idea, and I'm always interested in people selling ideas.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you have a great idea, your team is all about it, you're all excited about it, and you have a client that's not into it, or their idea is terrible? Do you do the idea that's terrible and you try to put lipstick on the pig, or do you go, we can't do this? Or how do you navigate those waters?
All right, here we go. You have to work through the mental gymnastics of you are not your work. You are your own person with your set of values, your set of standards. Hopefully you have a third place in your life besides work and family and other places that create meaning. And so you have enough self-confidence, you have enough self-respect and self-esteem that you can outlast the Mike Tyson punching rounds of being in advertising. Because your idea is a pathetic baby bird that could be touched the wrong way and it dies in the second. Your partner can kill it. The creative director can kill it. The account folks can kill it. The strategist can kill it. The executive creative director who wasn't a part of this project at all comes in for 5 minutes and goes, no, it can die at any level before it even gets to the client. So even if it got to the client, that's a gauntlet that this baby bird has gone through. And that's actually triumphant even of itself. But in every stage, you can't take it personally what people say about your stuff. We just have to go, that's not me. That's that idea. And I have had my ideas die in tragic and amazing ways, like a freaking scene from Band of Brothers or 1917. It's just, it looks like it's going with so much hope and then it's riddled with bullets. And then there's a flag over it and they take the dog tags away. And dealing with clients who have their ideas, it's an artful dance. Depends on your relationship with them. Are we in our first few weeks of working with them? You bet your butt you're going to work on how to make their idea work. If you're working with them for a few years, you gain trust and respect, and you could say, no, I don't think so. And a nice way. And I sometimes tell them, look, it looks like we're doing surgery live and surgery's messy. And I think you guys can, let's just take a minute and just not work on this for a minute and we'll come back to you. I try to ward off them trying to solve the problem because sometimes the problem is really just taste level. It's not really about something in that idea. It's just a taste level situation. And we just give it a minute and we can work on it again. So yeah.
I guess I got one final question for you tonight, and that is, what have you seen recently or read or listened to that wowed you creatively and made you want to do something?
Oh, man. Give me a minute. Tell the listeners to put it on 2x speed at this point. So I come up with a good answer.
Oh, it'll be all cut out. That's all right.
Yeah. We need a Jeopardy.
If we don't have one of these questions that make we play Jeopardy music in the middle of, we feel like we failed.
So it's not because nothing has happened. It's because many things have occurred. And I'm trying to think of the best one. I think I'll just say the finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which just aired. I won't spoil it, but I just feel like he exercised demons in writing that finale, the demons being the Seinfeld finale. And he did it in a very satisfying way. And I think it was basically like taming this insane beast that's been, was created 40 years ago, 35 years ago. And not that I know Larry David personally, and he doesn't need my adulation, but I'm proud of him for figuring out how to freaking pull that off. I don't know if that has inspired me to write anything just yet, but the beats that are in that particular episode are pretty great. And the tone of it, the mixture of hope and torture and punishment, is pretty satisfying. So I can't point to anything that I've done since then, but it will stay with me for a long time.
That's very good. So I do have, I probably should have Norbert had that question at the end. My question is, one thing I always wonder about, you guys are getting ideas all the time. Good ideas. You're getting just, if your agency is working hard, you're getting a lot of ideas. You're, because you've got all these clients. How do you keep it fresh? How do you make sure that you're staying ahead of trends and that you're not getting caught up in those things that will make the ad look old before it's time?
That's a really good question. And I would say that in that, and I talked about earlier, your creative ethic that will never leave you. I was deeply inspired by the work and the philosophy of Saturday Night Live's famous Jack Handy, a real person. And Jack Handy, and he's also inspired people like Conan O'Brien, a handful of others, subscribe to the idea of you only deal with things that are iconoclastic and that will stand the test of time. Dinosaurs, cowboys, aliens, things like friendship. These things will always be there and it will never be dated because it's always been here. And so we respect the trends and we actually have to respond to them in different contexts. And when we do the big tent kind of big advertising, we try to remain at that iconoclastic level. And that's my ethic. So I put that on the creatives. They might bring me something that's very like now and very, whoa, that's so cool. You're talking about AI and holograms and whatnot. But I know that within a year or two, it'll be off. So I don't know if you can see that through line in our work, but I try to make sure it can stand the test of time. That's what I gravitate towards.
That's awesome. You know what? I never thought about that. I really love your idea of your ethic and what you're doing in my art. I think I need more of that. Just to be totally honest, I think that's awesome.
There's different senses of fulfillment that you can get out of it. Because you could do something that's really hot right now and you can feel the love and the praise immediately. But it's really fun to reflect your work. Just cut to yourself at 80 years old, talking about the things that you've done in your life. And you show something on some ancient device that shows the work that you've done. And people go like, that's fun. I like that. Not like, I remember when we used to use those kind of things, or we used to say those phrases. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be at that retirement party. Anyway.
Yeah. I love that idea. Justin, we've had a blast talking tonight. This has been a lot of fun for us, and hopefully it's not been bad for you either. I really appreciate you being on tonight, and you're always, it's been fascinating talking to you about this. I think you've given us some great insights. I think our listeners will really enjoy this. Have a great night. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative. Hey, you're too late.